Radio Prague News.
Czechs have begun voting in the general elections. A motorist who caused a fatal collision in the Mělník area this month had been drinking, police confirm. Arsenal Football Club goalkeeper Petr Cech has kept a clean sheet against Red Star in the Europa League. Czechs began voting in the country's general elections at 2 p.m. on Friday. The country's approximately 8 million eligible voters are choosing from 31 parties and groupings, and altogether choosing from among 7,500 candidates. Close to 30% of the candidates are women. There are 38 contenders for each seat in the 200-member-strong lower house of parliament. Polling stations will remain open until 10 p.m. on Friday and reopen again on Saturday from 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. The preliminary results should be announced in the late afternoon on Saturday. The Prime Minister of Crimea, Sergei Aksionov, has sharply rejected Czech President Miloš Zeman's recent suggestion that Ukraine should receive compensation from Russia for the annexation of Crimea. In an interview for the Russian news agency TASS, Aksionov said the proposal was immoral. The Czech president has come under fire from all sides for suggesting in an address to the Council of Europe that Crimea's annexation was a fait accompli, and instead of sanctions against Russia, the international community would be better advised to push for some sort of compensation for Ukraine. A 40-year-old motorist who caused a fatal head-on collision in the Mělník area at the beginning of October was under the influence of alcohol, Mělník police spokeswoman Markéta Jonová has confirmed. The collision claimed the life of a 31-year-old woman in the oncoming vehicle and left her two children with serious injuries. Both are apparently now out of danger. The driver had allegedly attempted to pass another car on a stretch of road where that was banned for poor visibility. He succumbed to his injuries later in hospital. In other news, the Academic Senate of Charles University in Prague has re-elected Czech chemist and teaching professor Tomáš Zima as the school's rector. He will hold the position for 4 years. The candidate needed 36 votes and received 51, while his opponent, Professor Jan Černý of the Faculty of Science, received 17. The new mandate begins on February 2018. Arsenal Football Club goalkeeper Petr Cech made several smart saves and Frenchman Olivier Giroud scored late to give the Gunners a 1-0 win over Red Star Belgrade in the Europa League on Thursday night. Red Star were down to 10 men after Milan Rogic saw red after a second bookable offence. The win makes it 3-3 for the North London club, leaving Arsenal on top of Group H. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's all the news for now. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, polling stations have opened across the Czech Republic for the general election. We'll have details in a moment. And the Czech Prime Minister at the EU summit has said that consensus decision-making should be applied wherever possible. In the second half of the program, get your motor running and head out on the highway. Meet the CEO of a company behind Euro Truck Simulator 2, which has sold some 4 million copies. Voters have begun going to the polls in general elections in the Czech Republic that will conclude at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Czechs have also been casting their ballots at the country's diplomatic missions abroad. Ian Willoughby has all the details.
Almost 15,000 polling stations opened their doors around the Czech Republic on the stroke of 2 p.m. on Friday. Voters have until 10 p.m. and from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday to cast their ballots. Having received their voting papers in the post, the country's 8 million plus eligible voters are choosing from a record 31 groupings. Between them, the parties have fielded around 7,500 candidates, meaning that more than three dozen candidates on average are in the running for each seat in the 200-mandate Chamber of Deputies. Of those putting themselves forward for election under the Czech Republic system of proportional representation, one-third are women. To date, the 2010-2013 Chamber of Deputies has had the highest proportion of female members, with 21.1%. Less than half of that level of female participation was seen in the first lower house following the foundation of the independent Czech Republic. These general elections are the seventh since 1993. Czech voters abroad have also been casting their ballots at the country's diplomatic missions around the globe, of which there are over 100. Some Czechs in relatively large states travel enormous distances to take part in the elections. However, despite some calls to introduce it, the country doesn't have a postal ballot system. It's the fourth general election in which voting abroad is possible, and more than 9,000 people are registered. In the 2013 elections, over 10,500 Czechs cast their votes abroad. The Czech embassy in London has the most registered voters at present, with 800. Brussels and Paris are also expected to register significant participation. Ballots cast by Czechs abroad are counted in a randomly selected constituency, which this time is South Bohemia. The counting of votes will begin when polls close on Saturday early afternoon. The results should start to become clear a couple of hours later.
That was Ian Willoughby reporting on the election now underway in the Czech Republic. And of course, join us here at Radio Prague on Saturday for the preliminary reactions, first reactions, and the election results. Now, one of the most important issues discussed at the two-day EU summit in Brussels was proposed changes in the mechanism of EU decision-making, which would allow some EU members to push ahead with integration faster. For the Czech Republic, which is still outside the Eurozone, this could present a serious problem. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
There is general consensus in the 27-member bloc on the need to improve decision-making, which has at times proved frustratingly slow and inefficient. But finding the right solution is not proving easy. The president of the European Council, Donald Tusk, who drafted the proposed changes, said the need for unity must not serve as an excuse for stagnation, but neither should ambition lead to division. He said improved communication on sensitive issues was essential, and ahead of important votes, he would provide an overview of the points on which members agree and disagree in order to facilitate agreement. Tusk stressed that unity was essential on issues of crucial importance. The Czech Republic welcomed his proposal that consensus decision-making should be implemented wherever possible, and EU members should always seek broad consensus before giving space to closer cooperation within a smaller group. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka in particular welcomed the agreement that on some sensitive issues, consensus decision-making would be the rule.
I particularly appreciate the proposal to seek consensus on issues relating to the EU's asylum policy, since this would give the Czech Republic and member states of the Visegrad group the chance to say no to compulsory redistribution of migrants.
The Prime Minister said too many decisions by a select group of states would present a risk of EU fragmentation into interest groups pursuing their own ambitions and the EU hardcore tailoring the rules to its own benefit. Even now, there are groups in the EU with different levels of integration, and leaders such as French President Emmanuel Macron have been pushing for a multi-speed Europe which would enable the countries in the Eurozone to integrate faster. The Czech Republic, on the other hand, is one of the countries with a cautious approach to the idea. The Czech Republic is not a Eurozone member, and the outgoing government has not set a time frame for Euro adoption. Unless it moves fast, the country could be left in the slow lane, with decisions made in the EU's hardcore, which would inevitably have an impact on the export-dependent Czech economy. Risks do exist for the Czech Republic in this respect, Sobotka admitted, saying it will be up to the next government to decide whether the Czech Republic should not reconsider its stand and join the Eurozone as quickly as possible. However, in the Czech Republic, scepticism to the single currency remains high, and many parties have tried to boost their chances in the elections by voicing their opposition to the euro. Out of the 8 parties expected to cross the 5% threshold needed to win seats in the lower house, 6 said they did not want the euro for the time being or did not want it at all. The Prime Minister's own Social Democrats said they did not want to adopt the euro for the time being, but paradoxically, they do want to be part of the EU's hardcore.
And that was Daniela Lazarova. A quick reminder, this is the English Language Service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for today's main feature. 20 years ago, SCS Software was a small company just starting out, founded by 3 friends with programming backgrounds. At the start, the company took small contracts designing games for other publishers, often under a tight schedule and limited budget. In those days, the company was more or less invisible, its founders admit, with IPs going to the client. That's not the case anymore. SCS Software struck gold in an underappreciated genre, simulation games, in particular, truck simulators. Its first title was Holland 18 Wheels of Steel, and its flagship today, which has done incredibly well, is Euro Truck Simulator 2, which has sold more than 4 million copies worldwide. If you've ever dreamed of getting into the cab of a powerful 18-wheeler and starting the engine and heading out on the highway, this is the company for you. But how did SCS achieve such success? The key factor, they say, is that they were at the right place at the right time, getting a contract for their first sim and gradually realizing that truck sims were a niche where they could grow and eventually become a leading brand name. And they went from a handful of people at inception to around 100 today, and they're still growing monthly. Another factor, as CS says, was innovation in management, not only hiring the right talent, but also giving staff the freedom to excel, creating a positive environment in which they could be the best. For example, when SCS moved recently into a new state-of-the-art office in Prague's Kacherov, it was after first hiring an architectural studio to design workspaces that rewarded both work and random banter. Pavel Shebor is SCS Software's CEO. He explains here how that works.
Water cooler talks are actually moving the company forward. We try to make the space friendly to organic kind of company discussions, this culture of sharing knowledge and inspiration. We didn't want to lock ourselves up in some isolated bubbles where small teams internally work very well, but they don't know what the other teams are doing unless they are informed through some formal meeting by some higher-ups. So the company's structure is actually very flat. We don't have several layers of management. We have great craftsmen here, great programmers, great artists, designers. And we still work pretty much on the same project, the same concept. We want to influence each other. We want to maybe distract each other, but at the same time inspire each other by overhearing what's happening over there in this other corner, by watching what's happening on the screen as the guys are working. So usually there is a lot of totally random meetings, groups of people that grow over a few minutes of time from two or three people talking here on these cozy seats until you see 10, 12, 15 people standing or sitting around and discussing the topic. And then 10 minutes later, they are back to their seats and working on their own stuff.
So it doesn't worry you when you see that happening. You have enough experience over the 20 years now to know that this is process that's necessary to get things bubbling and generating ideas.
It's all a part of the creative process. Ultimately, sitting at the keyboard and looking at Facebook will not move us forward.
Moving forward, certainly, but a truck simulator, you're wondering? In a world where first-person shooters or other state-of-the-art games have dominated, a trucking simulation might not seem like the key to success, but it has been, and you'll understand if you've ever played one for a few minutes. I was able to witness a special rig at SCS complete with a steering wheel, a shift stick, and three screens on which the game is run. And when you get into the driver's seat at the company, you have the added bonus of a hydraulic system which simulates the full effect of G-forces. Simply, you find out what it's like to drive a massively powerful truck. Now, of course, you won't get those G-forces on your PC or Mac at home, but the graphics and overall immersion are nevertheless sublime. Pavel Shebor got into the cab of the 18-wheeler near a town near Paris.
It's kind of inspired by real places, but we have to just pick a little snippet of the actual world because the scale of our world, of our virtual world, is about 1 to 20 to reality. So we don't have all of Prague or all of Berlin or all of Las Vegas in the game. Just a few places reminding people, recognizing some landmark, but we want them to feel like they are there. So typically there would be a cathedral or something on the horizon that they can relate to and think, okay, I've been here, really, indeed. So it's all playing kind of a trick on the player, that people who know the place will recognize and appreciate the selected locations. People who don't know it, people who haven't been to Las Vegas ever, will recognize a particular hotel they know from a movie or a location that the place is famous for. So, like, when we go from Prague to Mladá Boleslav, we would have in our game the plain restaurant on the side. That's a typical example of a landmark that we have in our games that people recognize, relate to, even though in reality the segment may be 50 kilometers long. In our game, it will be 2 kilometers of driving. You're done in 5 minutes and you are there. But this kind of selective process of picking the landmarks takes a lot of research already, because you have to distill the kind of idea, the notion of the experience of a particular road segment into just a few spots, just a few characteristic elements for people to recognize the place.
And I have to say, just watching you here play it, it is very relaxing. Just the sound, the constant sound of the road, the engine, and checking the different mirrors, it's very cool. So basically you would have a play time of a couple of hours at least if you're loading up the game.
Yeah, well, the nice thing about our game, I guess, from the player's perspective, is that you don't have to commit initially to a huge, long session. You just take a load and maybe drive 10, 15 minutes, you deliver the cargo. The game is rewarding you with some cash or some reward, some achievement. So you are in the loop, and you say, you know, I can do one more cargo, and I can do one more cargo, one more job. And before you know it, you may be playing the game for many hours, and maybe the next day you see, if I deliver 2 more cargos, I will save enough money to buy a better truck, and I'll see what happens next. Or I will finally go from Bohemia to France and see the countryside there. I was curious to get there, but I have to drive there first. So people have a reason to come back to experience more, and we like it that way.
Back when SCS Software began with its first truck sim, Shebor, as well as his original team, actually knew precious little about trucks and has been a learning process ever since. He credits the player and fan base for their feedback. Players who know trucks, sometimes truckers themselves, demand a high attention to proper detail and authenticity.
If you don't know anything about trucks, anything is good enough. If you do know, then you can tell apart a sound of like V8 Volvo versus V8 Scania or something. These people are very picky, very vocal too about the issues, about the imprecisions. So we have to work to a very high standard. We have to always strive to get better about this, because it's never good enough. So there's always somebody trying to figure out how to make it even more precise, how to make it even more like particular for the different vehicles.
What did you know about trucks before this became your company's biggest seller?
We knew basically zero about trucks. None of the people initially in the company were a fan of even vehicle games or racing games, or not to speak about trucks. We had to learn on the go. For a few years after we've started, I think we still didn't know really much. It took time to develop an appreciation for this. I think when my kids were born, when my boys were born, and they're very, 3-year-old is sitting on your lap, and I want to play your game, Daddy. And then I realized that really, even for my own kids, it's an exciting thing. Actually, every man, when he was a boy, wanted to, be a driver of some big vehicle at one point, 6 years age or something. So I finally realized, hey, this is not something that we are doing because nothing else is available. This is something that we are doing because it's exciting, because we want to do it and we want to stick with it. It makes sense not just economically but also creatively.
Yeah.
But it took me a few years to realize that, no, I will not be switching to some different genre. We know how to do it. We do it very well. So let's really concentrate on this and then push as hard as we can into this direction.
And who are SCS's customers when it comes to trucking? What do they look for? What do they expect from a simulator game? Well, different aspects come to the fore for different players, the CEO explains.
Well, when we designed the games, and it's been really a process over a decade, we realized that different people look for different things in the simulation. Some people are really obsessed about the driving part and the precision, the fidelity of the driving. Others enjoy the aspect of building a company from nothing, like the rags to riches story, where you start as a lowly driver and eventually you buy more trucks and hire some AI drivers to drive for you and you are the boss. Some people enjoy exploring the environment. They have this compulsion to explore every nook, every little road. Some people love tuning of the vehicles. They put chrome parts on the truck. They purchase better engines, better gearboxes. So they kind of play this role-playing element that you have this fighter with better axe or better sword. Here it's a track that you improve and get new paint for, so it's more chrome, more parts. So there's multiple axles of the game that different people put different emphasis on one or several of them, but not necessarily all of them. But ultimately, it pulls people in.
And although truckers themselves are big fans and form the backbone of the player community, not everyone has to like trucks, at least at first. They get drawn in. And, well, here's more from the CEO.
And really, a lot of the players that we've picked over time are not necessarily into trucks. They just enjoy the environment, the exploration. What many people told us is the kind of zen driving. You sit behind the wheel, there's no race. Actually, trucks are supposed to behave on the road. You have to drive according to legal limits and everything, regulations. You are supposed to be driving slowly and carefully and kind of enjoy the road. And many people find it attractive. They don't necessarily go to play a game just to have their testosterone, you know, spike up and all the adrenaline of a fight or a race. Many people look for calm experience, for something to zone off, to forget about everyday problems, but to just spend a good time with the medium. And we have hit a pool of these players with the game, and they probably recommend each other that this is worth of the time to explore the world. So, and because these players come from different corners of the world, people in Europe may prefer to visit places in Europe or to play with trucks that are based on European manufacturers' designs. People in the US, on the other hand, usually prefer to stay at home, to drive their trucks as they know them from the roads. Each continent would have people who try to know more about the whole planet, so it's not like it's all locked up in Americans playing American truck and Europeans playing Euro truck. We have a lot of players from Brazil, from Turkey, from China. We have over 100,000 players from China playing Euro Truck Simulator.
Do you have actual truckers playing? But I was wondering if you get feedback from actual people who spend much of their real life on the road.
Yeah, I think the most vocal group in our fan base is actually former, current, and wannabe truck drivers who understand the technical field itself, who are very passionate about what they do. And we have these anecdotes of people arriving from a huge stretch from abroad, coming home, and their wife crazy at them because they launched the game on the computer and go on driving. So indeed, we have a lot of truckers who make the backbone of the community, who contribute with feedback. Ultimately, the corrective feedback from the community is pushing us somewhere else.
Pavel Shebor, the CEO of SCS Software, he was my guest in today's main feature. That brings us just about to the end of today's program, but don't forget, if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard in today's show, please do so by writing to english@radio.cz or look up Radio Prague on the social networks. Radio Prague is on Facebook and on Twitter and more. I'm Jan Bellinger. Thank you so much for joining us in today's show, and tune in again soon. Bye-bye.